Welcome to Cycling New South Wales Heritage Commission's podcast, the history of our wonderful sport. This podcast features a 2015 interview with Olivia Golan on the gold medal win by Sarah Carrigan at the 2004 Athens Olympics. The sport of cycling has been at every Summer Olympics since the start of the modern era in Greece in 1896, but it would be close to 100 years before the first female Olympic event would be contested at the 1984 LA Olympics, when Australia didn't send a female rider. Amazingly, it wasn't until the recent 2012 London Olympics that women raced the same number of events as the men. While most of Australia's female Olympic medals have come on the track, mainly thanks to Queensland superstar Anna Mears, who has won 6 medals, including one in the team sprint with New South Wales' Carly McCulloch, this podcast will focus on the women's road race, where New South Wales cyclists have been in the thick of the action. A very famous New South Wales cycling name would be in the women's road team at the 1988 Seoul Olympics, the first Olympics where Australia would contest the women's cycling events. She would also be there 4 years later at Barcelona when Cathy Watt won her gold. Kathleen Shannon is part of a family that was at the top end of New South Wales racing and administration. Then, of course, Kathleen would marry into another famous cycling family. Here is Kathleen's father, Mick.
So the Seoul one was dead flat. It didn't suit any of the Australian girls.
But Barcelona is a great story. There's a great story in itself, in that, you know, road racing is a team's event. Kathleen, from memory, was in that bunch just behind, and she's had to sit on Jenny Longo for the...
That's right, yeah.
It's probably went unnoticed a little bit, that
story. They didn't know Cathy Waters away. She jumped away with another girl, and the other girl dropped back, and, that's the story. I don't know if it's true or not.
Did Kathleen and Jackie Utton, was it, I think, from memory?
I think, yeah, Utton, yeah.
The two of them must have been thinking, this is going all right, sort of thing.
Kathleen got a bronze medal in Auckland, maybe Commonwealth Games.
Commonwealth Games, yeah, sensational. More on the Shannons in a later podcast, for this podcast is not specifically about female cycling. This is about one of Australia's greatest team performances, male or female. For Sarah Carrigan's gold medal at the 2004 Athens Olympics has been widely acclaimed as a near-perfect display of team riding. Here's UCI Vice President Ray Godkin.
I used to sit in that stand, particularly in Athens, with all my colleagues from the other countries and the UCI, and you couldn't have been a more prouder man, Sarah. That was great. What they did, unbelievable. You know, unbelievable. Yeah. I went to 7 Olympic Games, 9 Commonwealth Games, and then Sarah. That was fantastic in Athens.
Sarah Carrigan's Olympic gold medal at Athens was built around classic road racing strategy, with patience yet an awareness and an urgency to remain in contention from the drop of the starter's flag. This was made more difficult due to female teams in 2004 only consisting of 3 riders. Then, of course, you had the weight of expectation, with Anoni Wood the world's top-ranked rider in the World Cup that year. Clearly, the Carrigan-Wood-Golan team at the Athens Olympics had a big job ahead of them. Here's Olivia Golan. But I will apologise to Olivia for the opening question, but I did want to make the point that both Golan and Wood's entry into the sport of cycling was amazing. I should also point out, while all 3 riders have family ties in New South Wales, only Olivia Golan came through the New South Wales Institute of Sport. Anoni Wood coming through ACTAS, and Sarah is, of course, a Queensland girl. Your entry into the sport, Anoni was the same. You were late starters. Sarah came into the sport with the Talent ID program, but you burst into cycling. Like, you'd have to call yourself a natural. Within, 2 years, you were winning the Australian Road Series. It was a brilliant. start to your career?
You know, without sounding, it definitely was, I had a talent and so did Anoni. Both of us had big engines and we were little people, so of course we were naturally going to be good at road.
Did you think you would be that good when you started? Or like, did you always want to be a bike rider? Or how did it happen?
Look, I just, you know, did a local triathlon and then, you know, got fit in the pool, really. Like, I kind of thought I'd like to get better at this, and I started enjoying being fit. And then it was actually Greg Borer, who you probably know, who's a friend of mine from Newcastle, and he was just, like, working in a local bike shop while he was at uni here in Newcastle. And he was a good friend of a friend of mine, and he suggested that we have a race, and we just race locally, and I was kind of 22, 23 at that point.
Yeah.
I would say Greg was probably a really lucky stroke in my career in knowing Greg, is that Margie was racing for the national team at that point.
Yeah.
And Greg had done his level one coaching, and so he immediately knew, like, I was immediately privy to someone who knew about what the women needed to do training-wise to actually be competitive. And he also, just little things, like he said, we'd learn to ride the rollers, you know, make sure that you can descend, you know, what are you doing using your back brake all the time, you've got to use your front brake, all of that stuff. Very, very early on, that was it. And then when Greg soon after that moved to Germany, so he coached me for about 12 months, I guess. And then he moved to Germany, and Mick Chapman took over coaching me. And I would say Mick was definitely the person who, you know, took me from kind of fledgling to.
Two great connections. Like, it's amazing Greg Borer, who's clearly with the national program and everything, and married to Margie. And so it's just a great connection that got you into the sport. And then, as I said, it would have been only 24 months, like, won the national series, and that would set
you up. From the time I had my first race till the time I won national series was probably 4 years or 3 years.
Righto.
But I was doing triathlon, and I wasn't taking things seriously.
Yes.
It was probably 3 years. I had my first race at the end of 97, and then I won National Road Series in 2001.
Now, for you girls to get together to understand, to race as a team so well in Athens, did you get to spend a lot of time together? Did you?
Yeah, we did.
Right.
I mean, that was part of the, I guess, Anoni and Sarah and I had raced with the national team for 3 years together, and then Anoni for 2 years, and then Sarah came back to the national team. She'd gone pro in 2003 and then decided to come back to the national team for the Olympic year. And so the three of us had actually raced together that year. But not only that, Mark, we won the World Cup as a national team that year.
Yes.
So I think we had been very, I guess we'd had very good instruction I think the three of us were very intuitive racers, and we also knew very well how to work together. We also had people like Nat Bates and Margie Hemsley and Alison
Wright. Yeah.
And Hayley Rutherford and those girls who had been racing for a long time, they were on the national team with us at that time as well. So I think we just had a lot of very talented and very intelligent women.
Yeah.
If you look at the kind of caliber of intelligence that's amongst all of the women that I've just mentioned, they all have university degrees.
Yeah.
They all were very high achievers, not just on the bike, but off the bike. And I think that we all were very level about what we wanted to achieve out of the sport, and knew that we weren't going to be millionaires from it.
Yeah.
And we knew that we just wanted to race our bike and love racing a bike.
Now, I'll go a little bit further than just the degrees and things like that, but you and I were in a team in, you know, maybe 2006 or something for the Nationals down in Adelaide. And I'm going to say that you're not someone, if you think something's wrong, that you just let it happen. You try to work it out and say, this is what could happen. We need to have a bit of a plan. Am I right there? That's, you can't just...
Definitely. You know, like I was the president of the International Women's Union for the UCI for 2 years or something. And so I'm not, I'm certainly not someone, you know, I got disqualified from the from the Tour of Tuscany 1 year because, you know, we staged a protest and a girl, like the whole team decided, the whole race decided to race neutrally because the race course was too dangerous. And so we decided as a peloton that we were not going to race, that we were just going to race neutrally. And this young girl had been paid off by the organizer and she took off and I took off after her and I grabbed her jersey a couple of times in trying to talk her out of it, you know, like trying to say, what the hell are you doing? You know, and I did the wrong thing. I grabbed her jersey and I just grabbed it in that way. Like, come and talk to me. Like, just see reason. Anyway, the commissaires disqualified me and, you know, rightly so. But then the next day, of course, the whole peloton refused to race until they let me race. And, you know, like, I guess that, I mean, I tell that story because that is who I am. And I think all of us were kind of a bit of that vein. And
I think that's the reason I bring it up, because I do know that, you know, the moons have lined up here. You know, we've got a smart group of girls. You've raced for that 2004 World Cup, so you knew each other. You had a system in place. But it was built around all these things lining up to make sure that you had this perfect team performance. And now, who missed out on the Olympics?
So, you know, Margie missed out, Ali Wright missed out, Hayley Rutherford missed out. I mean, Katie McTeer went for the pursuit, so she was, you know, like she wasn't really gunning for the road at that point. Who else? Kim Shirley was around at that point and she missed out. There were lots of...
But they played their part in the...
They all played their part. I wrote a story not long after the Olympics for Cycling News, actually. I was writing a blog for Cycling News at the time. And I remember Dave Martin used it as part of an address that he gave not long after it. And I talked about the team that was around us, and it wasn't just a win for the three of us. It was a win for, you know, the team of physiologists and psychologists and, you know, everyone who... And coaches and mechanics and soigneurs and everyone who had stepped forward to win that gold medal needed to be part of what we did. And you know, I mean, 2 years later, we made that stand where Nat won the Aus Games gold medal and we all got on the podium. And that was by design. Like, we all sat there the night before and said that no matter who won the race, we would, or what rung of the podium we were on, we were all going to get on the podium. And we didn't get in trouble for that, but it was certainly against what the organising people wanted.
Extending that comment then back to the 2004 Athens Games, it's an extension of a whole lot of races, a concept or an attitude that you girls had. Yes, and how much was team planned and things like that?
You know, I mean, I guess road racing is always a poker game, Mark, and particularly in a race like, because we only had three people, that's not a lot of firepower to sit on the front and set tempo and that kind of thing. So you need to kind of make sure you're in the moves, I guess, and make sure that you're not the right people with the right people, if that makes sense. So we had James Victor. James Victor was our DS, not Warren McDonald. And, look, James certainly had been working with women with the women's program for a long time and was incredibly experienced and knew everyone really well. And, look, the last kind of 3 to 4K of that race, was sheer brilliance on Sarah's part, and it really was. Like, it was, very, very beautifully done.
Yes. Did you think she had it? Like, when she went with Judith's aunt, how confident did you believe that was the move? Like,
oh, look, at the time I was kind of, I had no idea that it was even happening. I mean, I knew that all three of us were capable of winning the race.
Yes.
So
you had
a
crack yourself. Were you looking for those opportunities? Did they come to you, or was Sarah, I'd imagine how fired up she would have been to get in that move, knowing that a Noni is going to be marked, isn't she?
Look, Anoni was very marked, and I would say that Sarah was probably the dark horse of the three of us, to be fair, and I think Sarah would say that too. Anoni and I had had lots of results through the year, and Sarah had hardly any. Yeah. And Sarah had been out at altitude training, so Anoni and I raced through June and July. So we did a block of training in Tuscany in June, and then we raced the Giro, and then we raced Turingen, and Sarah didn't. Sarah went to altitude because she knew that altitude worked for her, and Anoni and I hadn't really had that much success with it, so we just decided to do what we knew worked, and that was to race. And none of the other girls had seen Sarah for all of kind of July, at least. So I guess she definitely was the dark horse. And
to back that up, like, know, you've come, even the year before, you were runner-up in the Amstel Gold and on the podium in the Giro. You know, and then Noni's World Cup champion sort of thing. It was a high-profile team, wasn't it? Like, let's not
muck around. Definitely, and particularly for a national team, you know, Anoni and I hadn't been pro. Sarah had only been pro for 1 year and then came back to the national team. Yeah, so, look, to be honest, yes, we sat down. Yes, we had a vague plan about how the race would pan out, but we, all three of us, knew that we just needed to make sure that the right moves were covered and that, and it happened, you know, like, incredibly, it kind of happened that way. And Sarah put herself in that front group with Anoni. Like, there was a crash right at the front of the race, and Sarah and I were right at the front of the race, and Anoni was away in that group. And Sarah just looked behind and just went, there's a crash. Like, the German sprinter fell, and it just left enough of a gap for her just to go bang off the front and bridge the gap to the... And that put two of us in the break, and two in the break of, I think, six people, which... I mean, if we can't win from there, then
yes,
you know,
you've got control, and that's the big thing. You've
control.
Got put yourself on options, and a sensational result, and a great one for Australia, and then probably just to finish off, like, you look back over your career, I guess that's, after talking to you, it's not necessarily a high point. It's just another thing in the development of women's cycling.
Actually, that's quite an insightful observation from you, because, I mean, everybody presumes that if an athlete, you know, when they meet an Olympian, so to speak, they think that that must have been the high point of their career, especially when, you know, Sarah won the race. And it was. It was so incredible to be in the back lane in Athens, and, you know, my grandmother was there, Sarah's parents were there, and Noni's parents were there, my mum and dad were there, and, you know, that we had this gold medal that we were passing around, and it's surreal, really. But I would agree that if I looked back over my career, it's one of a series of really special moments, and, you know, nothing short of later on that year when we won the World Cup, or, you know, in Nuremberg, and we had Amy Gillett was on the team with us, and Matt Bates and Margaret Hemsley and Lorraine Graham, and so a lot of very special people who, it was a very special year, I would say, 2004.
You must take great pride in the fact that your mates, the people that you rode with, are the pioneers of women's cycling. You know, sure, there might have been courageous women that have rode right through the history of cycling, but it's these great races that have built the footing of what we are on now, a world tour, and it's built on those races.
Look, I agree with you. I think the state of the sport is not very good at the moment, and I think that from what it should be, I think it's like the Amstel Gold doesn't exist for women anymore, the Milan San Remo doesn't exist for women anymore, and these are all races that we raced 10 to 15 years ago. Where are they, Mark? You know, like, what's happened to them? And everybody says, oh, it's moving forward. And I think, oh, well, just because we've got an 80K race on the last day of the Tour de France doesn't mean the sport's progressing. And I do think that the fight and people are fighting the fight, but something needs to happen at the UCI level before there's any kind of equality or any kind of...
It can do more.
They can do more. Yep. They can definitely do more. And, you know, part of all of it's about money. But, you know, I do not want to take away from what's being achieved now. But at the time, we did have a really special group of women and women who... Because, you know, women who worked together really well and... You know, we didn't always, like, there were several.
Oh, of course.
We didn't have our moments, but certainly we had teams who knew what we were doing. And
you got to be partly selfish to make it to that level, but at the same time, there was an awareness, there was an understanding, there was a respect, which was probably not based around money. It was pure racing and something that people can be proud of to say that, you know, that was a wonderful time. So thanks
so much. And look,
it's
an amazing sport, women's cycling, and there's certainly, you know, it's incredible. I take my hat off to women who are racing. You know, they're not in it for the money, Mark, and they're not in it to be on the back of cereal boxes. They're in it because the racing's pure, and it's a very cool thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
While the general aim of the Heritage podcast is to be unbiased in the interviewing, I did have an ulterior motive while interviewing Olivia to establish that all members of a Games road racing team should be given medals. Of course, this was not to underplay Sarah's gold medal winning ride, as I'm a huge fan, and I've been lucky enough to watch her from a team car in Europe. I've not only witnessed her power and endurance, but I've also observed her super race reading skills, her coolness under pressure and a knowledge of the sport. She was a key to that gold medal. But I do want to make the point, it's a team sport. And if you get to see Olivia or Anoni in the lead up to Tokyo, congratulate them on their part in Olympic gold.
Should gold medals be handed to a whole team in a road race when it's a team event? I believe you're an Olympic gold medalist. And
so you want to know a little bit of backstory for that. The guys who ride the heat for the team pursuit, they get gold medals.
Yes. Well, and it's so obvious when you've got the highlight was your team performance, and it's so clear that both you and Oni won gold medals over there. You
know, and it won't be you saying that, that'll be me saying that. And it comes down to you very rarely do get a team who will work together because of that.
It's very hard not to chase someone down.
Absolutely.
You know, you're to give away all your chances. So clearly it's a great story that needs to be told. And
in closing, I don't want to suggest that there's any problem with team racing, for it is that strategy that comes with teams racing that makes road racing so motivating and enjoyable. In an interview with Anoni Wood at a New South Wales Masters race in Bathurst in 2015, she explained she wanted more women to get to experience team racing. And in her words...
Enjoy some of the aspects that I've been able to...
Officially, Anoni Wood was 4th at the Athens Olympics and Olivia Golan was 12th. And although I pushed the idea that they should be considered medalists, it seems in the end they simply just enjoyed their time working together for Australia.
You've been listening to Cycling New South Wales Heritage Commission's podcast. Thanks to Dried Arrangement for the music in this story. This is Heritage Commission Chairman Mark Windsor saying thanks for listening.